Blog Talk Radio.
Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I see aspiring to be free. And when I call to thee, and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Within and without, above and below, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. Without and within, below and above, yeah, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Lord of light and love, everything I find in tune with the divine. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And when I call to thee, and come on bending knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. For to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom, Holy Angel of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.
Thank you for joining me tonight here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I am your hostess. The music you were listening to at the beginning of the show is I Sense Your Presence. It's by Shimshai. And I just want to extend a welcome, whether you're joining us for the first time or whether you're returning and you've listened to the show before. Here at Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I look at different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. Some weeks I'm discussing different aspects of how compassion is in our life and affects our life and the different areas of compassion. Some weeks I do more exercises and practical implementations. And many times I have guests on the show so that you can learn about their work and how other things complement and work with compassion. And we do have a guest for you tonight. Adam Hull is going to be our guest this evening. Also, I will have nights that will be call-in coaching nights every once in a while. Not too much this year because I've got a lot of guests booked up, and so I'm really happy to say that I've got just an incredible lineup. Also, I've got some musical guests that are coming on. I had Stephen Halpern on earlier in the year, Jill Mattson on a few weeks ago, Peter Cater, also another Grammy nominee coming up this summer, so I'm looking forward to that. And so we have a lot of different things here, and what I do is to just kind of bring things to you that's going to help you make those breakthroughs, move forward, and expand your consciousness of what it means to be compassionate. Now, also in my own personal work, I focus on helping people to find and use compassion in their everyday lives. I created the Genesis Clearing Statement, which some of you may have experienced on previous shows, and if you've missed that, you can always go back and catch it in the archive shows. There was actually a great show that I worked with Kevin Baird, one of our other hosts, on, and it was right when my show started, and that would have been around September of last year, and he interviewed me on that work, and it was a really great show for highlighting the Genesis Clearing Statement on that. I've also authored two books, and those are titled Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion, the Workbook. I'm getting ready to release my next set of books. They're based on relationships. And so actually I've got four books authored, but two on the market available to purchase at the moment. And in addition to that, I've created the Compassion Tour, which is a multi-state nationwide tour. It includes workshops, retreats, seminars, book signings, and fundraising events. So lots happening there. Matter of fact, you'd like to check it out, I've got a Indiegogo campaign going on, and you can find that by going to www.indiegogo.com/, let me get the rest of it, projects/the-compassion-tour-2013. And that's my Indiegogo campaign, so you can go in and check that out. That also shares more about the Compassion Tour and what it is and why it's so important to be a part of. And let's see here, in addition to that, I'm sure that was probably enough, right? But you can also follow the events that are available to register for on the tour, as well as other events that I'm running. And right now I've still got about 18 events that are available to register for between now and the end of August. So you might want to check those out, which you can do at jessieannnicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. And there's also an option there for gifting the tour. So lots of options to kind of help out with getting the tour going. What happens with the fundraising events, by the way, is 90% of what I earn goes to the organization. So when we put those together, it's quite a bit of chunk, and that's really what it's about with the Indiegogo campaign, is not only helping me to get to those events, but anything over and beyond the amount that I'm requesting there is going to go directly to any of the organizations that I'm doing on that tour. Just a reminder, if you enjoy this show, make certain that you tell your friends, family, and significant others, Facebook connections, and anybody else you feel inspired to share it with. They can always listen to it right here at the same link, listening to it in the archive. That'll be available at their convenience. And they can also find archive shows in two places, on my Activating Compassion Facebook page, which is facebook.com/activatingcompassion/notes, and also on my website at www.jessieannnicholsgeorge1, that's the number 1.com. So all of the shows are archived there and kept for your convenience to go back and reference. Now, before we get started tonight, everything, if you've listened to the show, you know that I'd like to delve into a book called The 72 Names of God, Technology for the Soul. It's by Yehuda Berg. And I like to pull out a message every week just randomly. And it seems like it always applies in one way or another. So it's going to be interesting to see how this tonight's message might apply to our guest. I'm always fascinated by that. And what I do is I like this book because it puts things into everyday terms, which is what I like to do. I like to take big, giant concepts, put them into everyday terms. And I just kind of focus on what message we need to get. Now, by the way, this message will also be available on my website, on my page under the Main Street Universe tab, and you can read it. I usually have it up, usually right after the show, shortly thereafter, no later than about 24 hours after the show. So that's good to keep in mind. And let's see what Yehuda's message is tonight. And Yehuda tells us the name that we have here tonight is Looks Can Kill, Protection from the Evil Eye. And his message that goes with this name is, the ancient masters describe this name as a powerful, invincible weapon of war. It assures victory in the longest and most important battle in human history, the conflict against our own evil eye and that of other people. And the insight that he provides on this is, A person possessing an evil eye carries with him the eye of the destroying negative force. Hence it is called destroyer of the world. And people should be on their guard against them and not come near them so that they should not be injured by them. That's a quote he gave by Zohar. And then he goes on to say, eyes possess tremendous powers. The human eye has the capability to transmit both positive and negative energy. The evil eye refers to the negative glances and resentful looks that we can receive from people harboring destructive feelings towards us. Kabbalists attribute much of the everyday misfortunes to the evil eye. By the same token, when we cast the evil eye toward others, we create a greater opening within ourselves, attracting even more negative glances and their accompanying harmful effects. We become more vulnerable as our spiritual defenses are weakened. Thus, the evil eye brings equal harm to both the bearer and the recipient. And the meditation he gives here is, your own desire to cast the evil eye at others is diminished. A shield of positive energy surrounds you, offering protection from the negative glances, looks of envy, and mean-spirited intentions of others. Now, it's interesting when we look at this because there's a lot of people that don't believe in the evil eye. There are people that profoundly believe in the evil eye. But I think Yehuda brings up a really good point, and that is we're our own worst enemy when it comes to that. Because when we stand in the light, when we make shifts and we make transformations, we're not going to get harmed by that evil eye. It's only going to damage the person who's doing it. So it's very careful for us to not make judgments on people. It's very important for us to take heed and pay attention that we're not looking at others with envy and jealousy. And actually, I created a great video today, which you can find on my website, which is about gratefulness. And that'll hopefully help take you out of some of that enviness if you find yourself in that space. You can check that out. Again, that'll be getting posted in the next 24 hours. And so that's a great message by Yehuda. It will be up on my page under the Main Street Universe tab on my website at jessieannnicholsgeorge1. That's the number 1.com. Now, as we move into our topic tonight, is it possible to turn around the damage that we have done on this planet? Is it too late to shift back to having lush spaces and thriving natural habitats? Can we still provide a place for today's children to learn from nature so that they can continue to share it with their children? Growing up, I remember some of our best family vacations were going to national parks. There was nothing better than playing among the sequoia and the giant redwoods. In addition, I remember the building excitement of working summer camps year after year, walking among tall pines. And when I add this time on the, when I add to this time on the beach and volcanic parks in Hawaii, rappelling through canyons, skiing, and parks to play in, it tears me up to think that these things may not be a part of the experiences that future generations are going to get to experience. Nature is one of the greatest forms of therapy and rehabilitation, one of the greatest timeless teachers there is, and one of the greatest connections with spirit. There is no way you can stand in a slot canyon without seeing significance, or watch a sunrise or sunset in the desert without realizing the most bland-looking things are really bursting with color. And there's no way that you can sit on the ocean shore without having your natural rhythms restored, or stand among life that has existed for thousands of years without realizing what a short period of time we spend here on Earth. In most belief systems, we were placed here to care for the Earth and all of life that resides in it. Would you like to know how we're doing on that? Because there are people out there that are saying we're not very good. There are children out there saying, where's our future? You're destroying it. And it's heartbreaking to see that. It's a big wake-up call that we may not be doing what we need to be doing. Adam Hall is a part of a movement called the Earth Keeper Alliance and is doing what he terms as undevelopment, which helps to preserve our lands and keep natural spaces out of the hands of major developers. He is working on leaving future generations with something more than iPhones, shopping malls, and expensive homes. I feel that our time is here and that it is important that we start working on taking care of what has taken care of us for so long. The bigger picture? Think about losing all of our food sources, not having resources to communicate with others, travel, or have homes. It is time for us to wake up and let go of our greed and start replenishing and cleaning up our home, home being Earth. What would you like future generations to have? What is your alliance to the Earth? What steps are you taking to help preserve our land? How important is nature beyond being a pretty place to be? Again, this week our guest tonight focuses on a component of compassion that is related to the aspect in my books known as creating a new world. This is where we're moving beyond just being passionate about something, and we're moving forward in a way that brings consciousness and healing to the world. It's a bigger step. It's a stronger step. I'm going to take a short break, and when we return, I'm going to have Adam C. Hall with us. He's going to be sharing his work on the Earth Keeper Alliance and his concepts of undevelopment. The song that I have for you during our break tonight should be very appropriate for our guest. It's called A Walk in Epping Forest by Claire Hedin, and Claire was on our show back at the end of 2012. If you missed that, you might want to go back and check out her music. You can also find out more about her work at www.clairehedin.com. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Forest. so there I go, walking through the forest of my youth. And as my feet go one, planted in front of the other, walking on the pathway, covered in leaves, different colors, different stages of decay, of brittleness, subtlety, suppleness, fern and bracken, interwoven, different vegetations, talking to each other, nestling amongst each other, intertwining amongst each other. And as I look up to the forest of the trees above, the tall, tall trunks reaching to the sky, to the sun, to the rain, everything has its place. The sunlight is dappled across the leaves, across the ground, across my face, my hair. And as I walk, I feel the forest wrapping itself around me and at the same time opening itself up for me. And we are one. As I walk, it walks with me. As I move, it moves. One expressing the other, connected. And then comes the breeze. The leaves rustle. They bend. Constantly shimmering in the sunlight. Creatures, the little animals, the little insects, everything so populated, so busy, so silent, so loud. Movement, movement, movement. So graceful, this movement is so graceful. This earth is so beautiful. It's so alive. Constantly dying, regenerating, constant motion, cycles of being. And I'm in that. I'm a part of that, not from it. So beautiful.
And welcome back. You are listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I am your hostess this evening. You were just listening to a song called A Walk in Epping Forest by Claire Hedin. Again, if you'd like to find out more about her music, you can do so on her website at www.clairehedin.com, and that's spelled CLAREHEDIN.com. And I would like to bring on my guest tonight, Adam Hall. He is the author of The Earth Keeper, Undeveloping the Future, the extraordinary story of an earth conqueror turned preservationist who uncovers our true nature and reveals the creative power of the universe. Adam is also the founder of Earth Keeper Alliance, which has made the B Corp Best for the World list this year. And Earthkeeper Alliance focuses on acquiring large tracts of well-located, pristine land in the U.S., which is slated for development. They then ensure it remains in its natural, undeveloped state, and their focus is to conserve open space and preserve flora and fauna habitats. We will be looking tonight at Adam's concept of undevelopment in order to preserve land and continue to provide open spaces for people to connect with nature and renew their inner self. And you can find out more about his work at www.earthkeeperalliance.com. I'm going to get his mic opened up here, and that website is also at the bottom of the show description. Hi, Adam. Welcome to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour.
Well, thank you, Jesse, and it's great to be here with all of you and your guests tonight. It's just an honor, and happy summer solstice to everybody, and it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful summer.
I agree. I think it is, and I think this is such a perfect time to bring you on our show because, well, the summer solstice is all about honoring Earth, for one thing, and I think also because this is the time where we need to be getting out and enjoying the Earth, and I'm encouraging people, it's summertime, get out there because it's a great time to get into these natural preserve areas and start to realize, really, there's a huge value, there's a huge importance in keeping these areas safe and having something to turn over to our children. I would love, Adam, for you to share some about your background and how you made the shift and came into the whole Earthkeeper work from what you were doing.
Absolutely, and it kind of goes back a little bit to where we opened with that powerful phrase and little story from Yehuda there about the quote-unquote evil eyes, so to speak, because I was really living a life that I would best describe as the quintessential American dream. It was pretty much what I thought was the picture-perfect life. I had married my junior high school and high school sweetheart, and we have three lovely and amazing daughters together, built the big house out in Malibu, and was running a very successful real estate investment and development company, and you know, the country club, and you know, the whole kind of nine yards that I pretty much grew up with as the, this is what I was looking to achieve. And just when I had gotten to what I guess would be the pinnacle of that success in that place, I was taking a walk down the beach one afternoon and just dropping into the lap of the Pacific Ocean out here in California. And the sun was starting to set, and I was overwhelmed by a sense of that something was dearly missing in my life, and that I was finding unhappiness and not what I ultimately was looking for. So that was the moment, Jesse, when I began to ask some of these important questions. That I guess at some point in time most of us who are walking on this great planet of ours do ask. But I begin to ask those questions and to look at seeing the world from a different eye and ask, how can I find that and where should I go? So that should give you a little idea kind of when and where that began, and it precipitated a lot of meaningful things in my life, and be happy to share all of it with you and your audience this evening.
Wonderful. And I think that brings out such a good point because there are so many people that go after and pursue that, as you say, quintessential American dream, and they are living with that evil eye. You know, on a lot of levels, because they're running in circles. Not everybody that has money is like that, but obviously. But they're running in circles where there is a lot of jealousy and there is a lot of envy and there is a lot of strive for certain statuses. And that's the focus versus that being something you really love doing. Like you say, it was something that was kind of programmed for you there. And it's interesting because we had a guest on last week as well who had a very successful venture and had the same kind of a turn of events in his life and started asking some of these important questions as well. And he likes to say, I used to walk on the dark side. and now there's people like yourself which are taking and turning this around and using their success and the good fortune that they've had along the way to start to make a bigger difference. And I think that that is so, it's so key to people learning that lesson, that it's okay to be there. It's okay to have these things. It's okay to enjoy a great life. But also take time to think if there's something that you can contribute back, or if there's a way that you can do it that is helping the earth in the process.
Well, you're right. You're just so right on with all of that, and I'm so glad you're bringing that up. And yet, first and foremost for me was to really shift that eye to see from a different perspective in a different place. And easier said than done, I must say. It's no small task in the path and the process and the practice and the dedication it is to come home again to the heart that I was really calling me. Even at the time, I didn't quite know what was calling me. But what was I had focused on and where my attention was really going was to those things in life that which I would refer to as really addicting. Because life on Earth, it very much is. I mean, we grow up, at least I did, and you look in the world, and whether you watch TV or you have idols that you aspire to be, or that I was looking to be like, or a wealth and these type of things, that they can be overwhelming, and they overwhelm me, and it consumed my eye, which that eye I think of as the eye of the ego, and the eye that was it was really looking for for validation. And as a man, you know, we generally don't want to stereotype that, but many of men, and me certainly included, you know, look for to define themselves and validate themselves, and I did through these various things that were awfully addicting, whether it be money or prestige or things of this nature. And so to really kind of unwind that process, it's no small task, because it's really what I had been ingrained with, and then what I continued to support in my life. It became just a repetition of seeing the world in a way that was really what I describe in my book that just came out actually just about 10 days ago from Hay House, was that I was pretty much living a narcissistic, self-serving type of lifestyle. And so I'm grateful to be here today, to be of greater service, no doubt. But it's important what I found is to not ever forget the path and forget where I've come and where I'm going. But most importantly, to really honor that and honor my own soul's journey to evolve from a place which is, like your last guest referred to, that place of darkness, and like Yehuda referred to as that evil eye, which I think is the evil eye of the ego, that is more about wanting to be somebody than being able to express my truest and highest calling in life. So I hope that shares a little bit about my little pathway beyond this place of living in this world of addiction and this world of that we live within. And it's not to be critical of being a capitalist or wealth or fame or anything, because it's not mutually exclusive. We can live with those things all within balance, all within harmony, with the eyes of the heart and not necessarily the eyes of the ego, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely, and it's a great defining point that you bring up, that, you know, we can have these things. It's about a balance. It's about a sharing. And there is a big difference between coming from the heart and coming from the ego. And the ego can be so deceptive in making you think you're coming from the heart and things, because I'm sure even in your earlier days before you got started on this venture, there were probably pieces of you that thought, I'm doing the right thing. I'm coming from my heart. Look at how I'm providing. Those sorts of things. And I need to make an acknowledgement here. Hi, David. I see you in the chat room. I have got a problem going on with my chat where I cannot type in the chat. And so I can still see your comments, but I'm just not able to respond to them. So I will be paying attention and watching for them. So I see you guys there. So you did mention and bring up your book, Adam, which is one of the things I really wanted to kind of delve into with you. And as you said, mentioned, this just came out 10 days ago. It's published through Hay House. It is called The Earth Keeper, Undeveloping the Future. And it is the extraordinary story of an earth conqueror. Am I missing a word in there, I think, somewhere? Of an earth conqueror turned preservationist who uncovers our true nature and reveals the creative power of the universe. And I'd love for you to share a little bit more about that book and give people an idea. Why do we need to go out and get that book? What's the value in it?
Well, I love to address your great question from the context of why I wrote the manuscript in the first place, and my intention it really did not originate in writing a book per se. It really originated in putting together a series of writings and journaling and life experiences that I had begun to look at. Because after the moment that I shared with you, my life was thrust into what some refer to as the dark night of the soul. Others would say it's a midlife crisis per se, and I really think of it as a midlife awakening. It's a wonderful opportunity I found to just further my own soul's journey on this planet and to find myself in greater purpose and greater service. So when I begin to ask these type of questions, the big questions, you know, not just why am I here and what's my purpose and how am I to serve, those are very, very powerful questions. But there's also other questions. How am I connected in the oneness of all living things on this planet, animate and inanimate, that's which is seen in those things that are unseen? And how does that relate to the universe? And what is my connectivity to that? And so I begin to explore these various types of questions and traveling around the globe, in intersecting with various teachers and mystics, and my life of therapy and going to church, it didn't cut it for me, and I was looking for more diverse experiences and not simply through reading 1,000 books, but really engaging in the world very experientially. And when I began to do that, these kind of questions came forward, and I began to jot things down, and then I began to think to myself, well, my gosh, all these various pieces of my life and my journaling, I'm going to put them together. I always thought of this experience of somewhat as a game, although at times very painful and full of tears and a sense of loss and loneliness. But I thought of it as a game as well, and that there was just 1,000 pieces of a puzzle on a table. And I had tried for much of my 52 years to put those pieces of that puzzle together, but it was stuck, and it wasn't coming together. and it was anything but, and it was creating chaos and conflict in my life, and fear and guilt and other things were arising for me. So I smashed the puzzle and took it all apart and said, I'm ready to put this puzzle back together again. And so henceforth came the idea of the writings and putting together what I refer to as not just putting the thousand pieces of the puzzle together again, but really mapping, creating a map of my life. And as a matter of fact, of my lifetimes, whether you believe in that or stuff or not, I share some of these profound experiences of my soul's journey through various lifetimes. And of course, most importantly, although not necessarily the most important thing, the things and happenings and experiences and patterns and all the things that have occurred for me in this lifetime. And as I began to do that, I began to share that with others. And they mentioned to me, you should write that, and you should put that in a manuscript and share that with the world. And this is coming from a guy here that I flunked subject A, which is remedial English, at Berkeley with my first year as a freshman, and never thought that I could ever put anything together of such a sort. But it's, and I say to everybody tonight, and I say it regularly when I'm out speaking and sharing, we all have a story to share. And the time has really come to share the story. And no matter how shy you may be, young or old, whether you can write or not, we all have a magnificent story to be told. And so I kind of worked myself up to say, hey, tell your story. Share your journey in this life. Share your life experiences and all the various wisdom and teachings and things that came along in that path. Yet most importantly, I would say, was what I laid down, Jesse, as a prerequisite. And for anybody that does decide to pick up the book and get the book, you'll see something very, very clearly and intentionally, and that was that the only way that I knew that I could put this forth would be to be completely transparent, to completely reveal my truth, and to allow those things to come forth about my life. And this goes to the heart of the great work you're doing with compassion, if you ask me, is to have that compassion in your for myself, and to find that compassion in my own heart and in a place of deep forgiveness, to be able to reveal these various things. And there are things that if I was in a world of that evil eye, quote unquote, in that judgmental world, they would be the good, the bad, and the ugly. And they would be things that I would say I'm not necessarily proud of. But it was important as I moved forward to putting the book out, and I'll kind of circle this here, to be able to do so in a manner that was in a way that the reader could feel the presence of the author sitting with them in the living room, with the fire burning, and maybe having a glass of wine. I hope so.
That sounds good. I could go for a really good, really nice glass of wine, by the way. No, I'm just kidding. you bring up a good term and a good perspective that a lot of us do hit these midlife stages, and it is really about a midlife awakening as opposed to a crisis. I think it feels like a crisis for a lot of people, but it's really an awakening time. It's really that opportunity to wake up and step into this side of ourselves if we haven't. And it seems to me, as I'm listening to you talk, to lay it on the line and be transparent could be a very big challenge in this process, because I would think that there might be a little bit of fear of coming out and the judgments that would get thrown at you, like, how can you say you're doing this now when you've done this all your life? Plus, having to just reconcile with yourself in that process of, here's where I was, and I can't believe what I've done, and getting to that point of forgiveness for yourself, I think, is so very important. And what you're doing is, like last week's guest as well, is you're really working on clearing your karma this life versus waiting for it to build up and nail you next life type of thing. When we come to those conscious awakenings and we take action on them, we actually create a very powerful space in impacting a large volume of people, and to realize and accept that responsibility that I'm going to have an impact on a large amount of people out there, and I've got the resources to do it. And I think that that could be a very exciting shift to make as well, that now I can really bring this awareness beyond myself. Not only take beyond myself and share my story, but make this more global impact.
Well, very, very much so. I mean, when that process begins to unfold, when you can engage that place of sharing your gift and your story, and I'd like to touch upon the first part of what you were sharing about even getting there, in a second, but when we're able to do that, what I found is that my heart began to sing, and I begin to dance again. And we'll be talking a little bit about nature tonight and the Mother Earth, no doubt about it, as we go along, but therein was my greatest partner in it all. And it allows for that freedom to occur again. So certainly the outcome of it all is magnificent, and it's not the dark, so to speak, that we fear. It's the idea of darkness, because when we get there, there's nothing to fear, and it's the same thing applies to showing up. Just showing up in life. And it's just the idea that when I had to try to show up in life, that's what I was fearing. But when I finally crossed beyond all the story and all the pain and the suffering and the shame and the guilt and all those things that were occurring in my life, I quickly realized that, oh my gosh, it's almost kind of silly to think that, there's really just nothing to fear at all. And here it is. I feel a greater sense of joy and a greater sense of purpose and a greater sense of my divinity and connection to one and everything in my family and my community. And you begin by bringing up something really, I think, important, Jesse, and that is just taking that step, just moving in that direction, or even thinking, and then turning around and, I got to get the hell out of here. why am I not going to face this stuff? Oh my gosh, I don't even want to admit it to myself. Well, I was living a life like that, and it was a lie. It wasn't true. And in the result of it, it was starting to manifest in my health. because that's what occurs. It becomes to manifest in our physical, in a psychological state of being. And that, for me, that was just my stomach. I mean, I lived on Tums, going to work and going to meetings and, you know, cutting deals and, you know, just living, being ruthless. And in other ways, it was the suppression of anger that was hidden away, that would kind of rise out like a bolt of lightning. And so the title of the book, I'd like to share that because it reveals a bit about getting on the path and what it meant to me. And I chose the Earth Keeper. And many of your audiences may be familiar with that, but it's a term that's has its roots in the indigenous cultures of America, and Native Americans, Mayans, Incans, other cultures that lived in primarily in North America, but also came across from Siberia, across the Bering Strait. So it has an ancientness to it, and the Earth Keeper is one that tends to the well-being of our planet, meaning our Earth, our Mother Earth, but also tends to our humanity, and it tends to the well-being of our communities. And it could be from just a pebble, a grain of sand, all the way up to your flower, the bees, and all the magnificent things that we have on this planet. But one of the things that I learned early on was that, hey, wait a second. Before you can be an Earth Keeper, you got to clean up your own garden, Adam. You got to clean up your own soil. And I polluted my garden. Matter of fact, I was growing weeds and not flowers and not love and not compassion and not kindness. I was growing and manifesting other things. And so, hence, the book very much shares that path of Adam's 1.0, so to speak, to Adam 2.0, coming to that place, and how the nature and the power of the universe made a difference. I didn't need to sit in a pew. I didn't need to read 1,000 books. I didn't need to keep going to thousands of therapy and workshops and all this stuff. Not to say that's not important, because it does have relevance and it does bring things, but it's not, doesn't need to be my crutch. And I decided that I was going to throw those crutches down and reach and touch my heart and say, hey, okay, if you're going to get on the path and you want to live your life and you want to fulfill yourself and reach these various goals, and you want to be what an Earth Keeper does and becomes, you got to clean up your own stuff first. So that's where I began. That's the place where it was kind of point A for me in the book. So it's been awfully fun, and I'll give you a little feel for you know where I'm going with all of this.
Absolutely, and you know I think that is. You bring up a good point with starting in your own garden. You know, if you're going to make an impact on lives and other people, you need to clean up your own act. And it's not to say that you won't do some of that cleaning up in the process of helping other people, but that you've got to start with yourself. They say the giving starts at home. Well, the cleaning up starts at home, too. And that home is yourself. So it is a big, big point in there. Now, you use a term, and I guess, well, and this starts to delve into your organization, the Earth Keeper Alliance. Let's move to that. What is the Earth Keeper Alliance, and why is it going to make such a difference for people?
Well, I'd like to segue into that. And let's segue into it in the context, which I think is takes us from the, you know, takes us kind of from the very personal conversation here, kind of the micro part of my life into the macro part of my life. Because it, you know, when I think of ecology, when I speak of transformational ecology and our spiritual ecology, whatever you may talk about it, I think of it and put it in the context and frame it in the context of our total environment, and that meaning our inner environment and our outer environment, and it also in the context of how to integrate and unite those two ostensibly different worlds. And oftentimes the place of complete separation from that inner and outer environment. And that's really where I begin, because I begin to say I was separate from that inner environment. And in what occurred is in a practice and a process that really led me to the Earthkeeper Alliance. And the mission of the Earthkeeper Alliance, which is the conservation and preservation and restoration of wild and precious spaces on the planet. And to do so in a way that can still be profitable. And I hope we can get into that a little bit, because some of us are going to want to talk a little more about that, and I'd be more than happy to do that. So, but the process of moving into that space of being in the world, being of service, being living a life, a purposeful life, originated from what I coined as undevelopment, and the subtitle of the book is Undeveloping the Future. So The personal process that we've been talking a little bit about tonight is really important, because there's so many different ways to engage this inner world, this place that I was ostensibly separate from. And there's amazing modalities, whether they're east and west, whatever that may look like for each of us. There's no right or wrong way or right or wrong path. But what I want to put forth in this manuscript and what I did was what I found to be a quantum process, a process that said, I'm not going to wait around for the rest of my life to say, oh, my God, what did I not do? What did I miss? Why didn't I show up? I wasn't going to do that. So the idea was, okay, if that's the case, and I'm going to show up right now, and I'm not going to wait lifetimes to kind of crack into this deeper divinity of my own life, then what are you going to do, and how are you going to do that? Well, that is the process that I call undevelopment. And it became a key pillar to the Earthkeeper Alliance. And just to give you a tinge of undevelopment, and we certainly can drill down, should you so choose, is undevelopment is really code for deconstruction of the past. You see, I was living today and tomorrow based on the events of yesterday. And as I was sharing, yesterday happened to be full of pain and suffering and chaos and guilt and all those type of things. Well, there were fleeting moments of happiness, and I did live my life in a way that was, you know, comfortable, and I got things. But I still had the problem of separation, and all these things kept cropping up again and again and again, and it didn't work. So undevelopment, that process of deconstruction, it goes a little bit contrary to our kind of our rational thinking minds, because normally, it's at least in the real estate business, it's all about development. How much can we stack on a piece of property? How? What is the greatest amount of entitlement? Well, in my own personal process, it was about that development, about evolution. It was about evolving into something. But that something was driven by that evil mind, evil eye of, and I'm using evil in quotes here, by the way, of the ego. So I sensed that, you know, the key for me was this undevelopment. And that was a process, an inner process. And then I turned to answer your question, and forgive me for my long roundabout pathway here to it, but then turned to... Go ahead.
It's because I wanted you to talk about undevelopment and what that was. So it was great that you used that for a segue.
Yeah, and absolutely, because it turned me to saying, okay, I have, here it is, this lifetime of experience in an industry, real estate. I have a lifetime of skills and experiences. Each of us have these gifts. We may not be in fulfilling jobs, but we have gifts and skills we've developed, with different gifts and skills we've come to this time on our earth with. And it's time to put those forth, and we can put those forth and put that into a place of true vocation, a place where we are not only living and doing in the world, but we're being in the world where we can express our greater service to our humanity and our planet. So that really became the question for me, that what am I just going to junk my business? Am I going to junk my career? I've, you know, pretty much moving beyond the old story and the old stuff that I created in my life, in my lifetimes, and I just decided I would do the same thing over and over again just to prove myself that the lie that I was living was a truthful lie, but it wasn't the case at all. So hence, okay, how can I look at real estate and real estate investment in a way that could be of greater service to our planet, our community, to still facilitate making money, because I am a capitalist, and bring peace into the world, bring peace into my life, bring peace into the world, help be somebody that is solving that. So I begin to bring that forth into a new paradigm around land and really around the environment in general. And that really is the bigger question, is our relationship with the environment, and to help facilitate creating places where people can be and be in relationship with nature. And as I mentioned, to facilitate conservation, preservation, and restoration. And if you look at that as an acronym, it's CPR. It's CPR. In nature and the earth, in my experiences that I share, many of them in the manuscript, not in terms of I did this and did that, but in terms of storytelling, deep storytelling from my experiences and my connectivity to the places that I went and traveled and those that were there and present there that shared it and taught me and showed me the way and held me. And helped me get up off my knees when I was begging to be shown the way. But to bring CPR to my life, because nature resuscitated my life, and Henry David Thoreau has that great quote, "In wildness is the preservation in the world." And I liken that to my own personal journey. In wildness, in wilderness, was the preservation of myself. So hence, came back into being in the world and creating a paradigm around our platform of of land to conservation, and doing so in a way that it undevelops property. And in other words, we take away development rights and potential development rights that are going to be occurring on a piece of property or already have occurred, and we remove them in perpetuity to the end of time, to remove them from the pipeline of potentially major development or impact on the property in order to conserve the property, but just keep enough that can make it really make it worthwhile where people can still enjoy that. So that's a little bit about what we're up to at the Earthkeeper Alliance. We can explore that more as we go along here.
Absolutely, and there's two good points, too, in this transition that you were bringing out as well. You know, this whole concept of deconstruction and kind of like you've got to take it down and then shift it around and put it back together. And this is how we transition that I think isn't oftentimes discussed, where you have something, and it's a good example of how everything is energy, and it's what we do with it. If you take it in one direction and construct one picture, it's going to be destruction and development, in your case. And if you take it in another direction, it's going to open this whole new door, which can create positive experiences for people. The energy is the same. You're doing the same field. You're in the same field. You're doing the same work, but you've transformed it into something else. And so I just feel like that's a good example of so many things in our life, that they are one energy, but it's up to us to make the shift and the change and to use it differently, to use the skills and the tools and things differently. And another point that you brought up was the relationship that comfort does not equal happiness. You know, we can't assume, yes, it's nice to have comforts, but it doesn't equal happiness. And you might be in something that is maybe less comfortable for you, but it could be providing a lot more happiness. So they're two separate things. They're not always tied together hand in hand. And I think as we bring that concept out, it's an important thing to separate, or in your words, to get deconstruct, and to put back together differently, because when we put those pieces together of happiness and comfort, it creates a huge block to us achieving success in our life. And that's one of those big blocks of where we step back and we go, I don't understand why I'm not succeeding. I don't understand why I'm not getting anywhere with things. Because you've got this tie of things that success, that happiness equals comfort, and it does not. So I think you bring up a couple of really good points there. Now, the Earthkeeper Alliance received the B Corp Best for the World list for 2013. Why is that important? What does that mean? And, you know, what is the B Corp Best for the World? And there, before I say that too, before I let you answer that, I should say, I've got somebody in the chat room that is mentioning, in practical terms, does Adam's work involve properties that are not yet part of a community's official plan? And when the properties are part of a community's plan, is there discussion with the community to get a buy-in for it?
Let's
so
go
kind
to
of
that question.
At.
Yeah, no, we can we'll swing back into the B Corp in a moment. So no worries, and I appreciate you bringing that up. But to answer that question and to look at that, it is typically the case that these various properties, to one degree or other, have some level of development right associated with it. So for those of you that are not in the real estate business, all property is typically has some level of zoning that is placed on a property. And sometimes it could be as rule as purely open space, which is pretty much what we would think of as a national forest, or just space that's not meant for any development or any use at all, not even a park. Then we have things that are more traditional, like agricultural space, all the way up into the higher densities of, you know, downtowns and building communities and whatnot. And we are looking at a property right now that we're looking to acquire that is in a very pristine location, sits on 3 miles of lake frontage, 2 miles of river, and it has existing development rights for over 4,000 units, including hotels and golfing and skiing and all this stuff that is almost mind-boggling, the amount of carbon imprint that would have on that land, and much less even thinking about the destruction of the biodiversity and the beautiful forest that's there. So the process typically to answer your chat room inquiry is one where, well, when you wind up a development, when you wind it up in terms of building and creating it within the community, working with whether it's the city or it's the county, and working with the various people in the community, the various stakeholders, whether that's the employment base and or just simply families and people that are impacted by development, then yes, it's imperative that they are involved in the process, because, as I just said, they are stakeholders. They do have a stake. We are also here to say nature has a stake. That lake has a stake. That river has a stake. That bald eagle and that deer, or that little flower that's blooming, the wild flower, it has a stake as well. And so we want to lend voice to that as well. So hopefully that gives your caller a little more of an indication about working with community, working with entitlement. You're getting them, but we're not in the business of getting them. We're in the business of taking them away and shrinking them down. And it's very tough to say no. It's very tough to say no to the environment. It's getting tougher and tougher and tougher. So we want to make sure that those that want to say no to the environment, that they are speaking very transparently about where they're coming from and what it is they are after, and to recognize the outcome of it, because ultimately I think we're all witnessing the degradation of this environment and this planet. Although our conversation is not about as critic and as one that is doing nothing but complaining, we really are focusing on what's working and how we can all move forward together. So I hopefully that gets our question at least going to the next thing, or not, whatever's good.
yeah, he said excellent, yes, thank you. So definitely got it answered.
Okay, great. So you asked a question about the B Corp. So you want to talk about that for a moment?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's talk about the B Corp. So B Corps, this is really cool. B Corps are coming into existence. If you think about corporations, you think about traditional corporations. There's like S Corps and C Corps, and there's these various forms of limited partnerships, and not to bore your audience with these type of things. But B Corps are coming into existence, and there's a few states, including California, Delaware, and some other states, that now have adopted legislation that allows for B Corps. It's referred to as a benefit corp. And benefit corps are about not simply creating bottom-line profitability. They are about creating a quadruple bottom line, And what that is it's the quadruple bottom line is about people, planet, and profits. That's the triple bottom line. We think of it at Therakeep Alliance as the quadruple bottom line because it's people, planet, profits, and peace. We want to bring resolution and conflict resolution to these, not just into these communities, but to these lands that we're focused on. And as a matter of fact, it served as a basis for our nonprofit because the business is a hybrid company. We are a for-profit company, but we're also doing highly socially oriented activities, and that happens to be environment. There's a lot of people doing other work around the world that is socially good social responsibility. We happen to be focused on the environment. So the B Corps are folks, and there are about 600 or maybe 700 of them now that are associated with a B Corp status. And we just happened to receive a five-star highest rating from B Corp, made the top 10% on activities and where we're going and what we're doing. And so that's what the B Corp is all about. And we just became also a member of the 1% for the Planet. And these folks are doing some great work, and it's about donating profits to various other nonprofits to support all kinds of different causes around the planet. And we happen to have, my wife and I, we happen to have a nonprofit called Earth Service, and it's dedicated to creating urban gardens, educating youth in urban gardens. And it's dedicated to bringing environmental awareness. And I encourage everybody to go and please check out that site and join us. There's nothing required, just your heart and your mind and that you care. And you can go to earthkeepermovement.org, earthkeepermovement.org, and check it out. And you can put your name in there. We'll send you a really cool complimentary e-video book, and we'll just stay in touch periodically and love to hear from each of you of how you're connecting with this great earth of ours and how what's happening in your community and how we can all work together. So love to hear you, love to have you join us, and we would welcome that. There's a lot of exciting things going on, Jesse, in the world. A lot of things that are challenging and difficult, but again, what eye are we looking from? Are we looking at that eye of the ego, or are we looking at it from that eye of the heart, that place of compassion? And my vision didn't begin until I could see from that place of my heart.
And that's so great. And I think that is a big thing, even just as a general message as well for people, that finding something where you're giving back, you know, when you're making these successes and you're giving back to other organizations, or you have, for example, your own nonprofit that is helping do this education work in there, and that really our path starts when we start looking from the eye of spirit and when we're looking from the eye of the heart. I want to address something. I do have a person in chat, and I think that they were hoping that our show was a different type of show tonight, and I just want to let them know that I'm not doing readings tonight. However, we do have several guests on the network that do readings, and Sunday nights, Darren Bouquet, Monday nights, Kevin Baird, and Tuesdays is Mary Phelan. So I would suggest coming back any of those nights to that person that we have there, and they would be able to get that. So it looks like that took care of that for a moment. And so I think this is very exciting. I think it's exciting to see this transitioning. And I guess, you know, it's always amazing how the time kind of slips away, and I want to make sure I kind of hopefully address a couple of other things in here as well.
Yeah.
And we've got a little bit of time to work with, but it gets away from me before I know it. One of the things, too, that I see is I could see it being a concern for people, which would be you're going in, you're buying up this land, and, okay, I'm kind of hearing what you're saying, that you've made this big change in your life, and now you're pro the land, and you're trying to be a voice for them. But what keeps you from going in and developing the land? And how is the land really kept safe in this process of what you're doing?
Two things, an excellent question. And it really kind of pertains to the kind of this the status quo of capitalism, of kind of the way I sense that we can often perceive how our modern economy works and how things work and how money works. And money, some say talks and everything else walks. I mean, you probably have heard that. And because it leads to kind of the question, it says, well, hey, is money really dictating the show here and determining it's just going to be developed out and that we can line our pockets? And the answer is no, because we can be green in both senses of the word. Those two words and two things are not mutually exclusive. We can do those together. But the ability and what I am finding, and it is the challenge, it is the rub. And I do want to say, you inspired me a while ago with part of your conversation, Jesse, because what I have found is if we're not playing the edges of our life, then we're not expanding. If we're not living in a place where we are making mistakes, then we are not growing into our fullest potential. As a matter of fact, life is not about not making mistakes. It's about making mistakes. Of course, we don't want to just keep repeating them. So, of course, out of my greatest failures came my greatest calling and my greater truths. Those things are now I see as blessings, things that took me down or ostensibly were attempting to, or however we view it, whatever it meant to us. You know, those are the things that call us. But back to your question about talking about development, we do a very limited amount of development. The model, the economic model, would not work unless there was a degree of development. Now, one of the cool things, as a matter of fact, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal just a few weeks ago that said, that proved out a study that said the value of lots that have a larger degree of open space and preservation, the value of those lots remaining is 23% higher than they would otherwise be. So when you think of creating large backyards and common area that can be shared, that means a lot to some people. That means a lot to the communities that want to be a part of that. That means a lot for families who are coming to those properties and sharing in those properties. So we do a limited amount of development. And the point that I would really like to bring this to is that it really is up to the individual. It's really up to each of us. It's really incumbent upon each of us. And what I found is that I have a great responsibility and duty as an earth keeper, and I believe every one of us is an earth keeper, that my duty and my responsibility was that old paradigm that I lived with it, that old I would not be the determinant of how I guided myself and what I did in the world and how I manifested my greater dream. When I was doing that, I was just in the doing place. But today, it's really about coming from that being place, that inner world, that inner eye, that eye from the heart that says, hey, wait a second. It's just not going to be driven by capital. That has not worked. That has not worked for our planet. Now, some may say it has, but you can just look around. You just turn on the TV, whatever it may be out there. And I must say, that old eye has lost its sight and it's losing its way. So instead of being blinded by it, I decided to open up a new eye, an eye that can see, you know, all around, so to speak, and can be connected to our earth and to nature and to the animals and to others, where in the past I wasn't that way. So it's a matter for me, in my particular case, was I was going to be guided by the new sight, and that's where I've remained today. And if it doesn't fit within that, then I will no longer subjugate my soul and my spirit to a way that really almost took me out, as a matter of fact. I could have just become like a walking dead person around if I just continued on. I mean, I'd have a lot of money. Yeah, I'd have all this stuff. But wait a second. There's a bigger picture. That's what I said to myself. So to answer your question about capital and development, yes, we do some development still, but it's really taking away development rights that are there, keeping enough to make it work, doing conservation easement work, preserving the property, restoring the property, and creating the biodiversity that needs to be on the property, and then looking at things from that perspective, not just a purely old, kind of tired out dinosaur type of perspective that I was living in. To be quite frank with you, I think the world, for the most part, is really living in that old paradigm. And I, for one, am just showing up in my own little way to support that movement towards that greater wholeness and well-being of our own lives.
And I wanted to bring that in because I knew that question would be there for people like, well, what's to keep them from doing that? You know, we had somebody in chat that was mentioning they were asking if there was a covenant, and they were saying in Canada the only way to ensure that property is not developed in the future is to place a covenant upon the property specifically restricting the activities permitted.
Yes, that's correct.
And I think that for me, asking about, you know, what are people really going to gain from this? And can the average person, you know, that maybe can't invest in property or things like that, can they still enjoy these lands? Or, you know, are we talking 10% is developed up, or are we talking 80% is developed up? Or
well, we're talking 90%+ not being developed. So in some cases, the properties are available to the public. In other cases, it's not available to the public. We have a project that we're working on in Hawaii right now. That's a 16,000-acre project, a very large project, 4.5 miles of ocean frontage. And the person that we are doing this project with and joint venturing, what's the outcome of it? It was going to be developed. I mean, with a jet strip and a town and hotel. I mean, a mass amount of development. And it just so happens that it's the largest cultural heritage site in all of Polynesia. So that particular property will remain accessible to the public. And in addition, it will protect some of the endangered species that are on the property and limit the development rights. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like yet because it's so massive. And, you know, where it will go, we're guiding it to the right place, hopefully, and God willingly. So it really just depends on what is particularly called for on an asset, where it's located, what kind of biodiversity is on the property, what is happening in communities. We have things we look at in timber communities. So, you know, people in those communities, they're very sensitive because their livelihoods often depend upon timber. So we have no issue with timber harvesting. It's just what kind of timber harvesting. And we look at sustainable timber harvesting. We're flatly opposed to clear cutting and planting of GMO trees. I mean, how about that? I was talking recently with one of the behemoths out there in the timber business. I won't mention their name because that's not the point here of any of my conversations for the most part. But they are proud of the fact that they are the leaders in GMO trees. I mean, my gosh. So there's things that we're doing that are attempting and putting us into practices that we see as wholly inconsistent with how the natural world works and how we as human beings on this planet should engage with the planet. And one of my board members, for example, and you kind of got me fired up a little bit here on this one, so forgive me at this hour, but one of our board members recently came back from the World Forum in China. And he's a very prolific man, and his name is Michael Tobias, and he wrote a piece in Forbes. He writes for Forbes magazine regularly, and just look up Michael Tobias in Forbes magazine. About 3 weeks ago, he provided a report on what's happening in China. I'm not going to get into the report tonight because we're all going to bed with sweet dreams and feeling our hearts feeling and seeing from that place. But it was really a wake-up call of what's going on. And the primary message coming out of the Chinese is that, and many of us have seen these cities are incredibly polluted. On the front page, actually, of the Los Angeles, not on the front page, but I forget which page, of the Los Angeles Times, there was a woman and a picture of Beijing, and you can't even see a couple hundred feet. And this is common. 80% of their forest has been destroyed. Not to get into it, I got to get off of that. But the point really is that, you know, that part of the world says, hey, who are you to say, we don't have this stuff. We want to live this life. We want to have cars. Don't tell us what to do. We're going to do what we want to do. In the meantime, they're sinking the boat for everybody. Obviously, we're part of that boat, and we're doing all the things we can. So in our own little way, we want to show up and really help what we're doing around real estate. But we also want to say, and it's really a personal message from me more than anything else, and it's really the primary motivating factor of the book is to really say, hey, look at your own personal ecology. And that's really about my own life. And this is not to say there's one way or another. Anybody shouldn't live their life the way they're living it, because I would be the last person to ever say that. You know, go ahead and do whatever you see fit as long as it's not impacting the rest of the world. But we hope that you can recognize, as I am recognizing, at least showing up in my little way and experiencing, that, hey, my own personal connection and my own personal ecology in relationship to the planet and all living things is the place to begin. That is the place, the thing that we can save. And that's what I realized. I can save myself. I can save myself. And I chuckle when the environmentalists out there, folks out there in the world, well, we got to save the planet. Well, that, I mean, save the planet? I mean, I don't know. That seems kind of arrogant to me. So my sense is save yourself, connect to the planet, serve yourself and your life and your family and your community and whatever else is really important to you. And that's, I think, how we can, each of us can share our story. And we kind of started there by saying we all really do have a magnificent story, and your story can change the world and change somebody's life and make a difference for this planet, because the time is now. Time is right.
And that interrelationship too, it kind of comes back to that interrelationship of in order to save ourselves, we're going to have to work on the planet and undertaking preserving some of these things.
Absolutely.
It's the only way we're going to survive. You know, if we let all the GMO stuff go up and we come in and we plow all the trees out and we rape the land, as they say, the supermarkets are going to be empty. Mm-hmm. There isn't going to be products. There isn't going to be food to buy, because these things are not going to survive.
I've got one for you. And about a month ago, the Department of Agriculture came out with a report on bees. Some of you may have been hearing about what's going on with the bees. So the report clearly said, and this is a government report, you know, so they're probably making it look as good as it possibly can, because it said that last winter, beehive colony die-off was 31%. In other words, it's the population of beehive colonies died off 31%. Now, the bees are the primary pollinators. I mean, we have other ones, you know, bats and, you know, butterflies, amongst other things, but they are the primary pollinators. And no bees, those shelves are going to be empty. And if this keeps up, you think the prices are expensive now? My gosh, it'll skyrocket even more. So there's some major events that are happening, and one reason why the movement is, we put together the movement, is not simply to get our youth and our children back into the garden, because it is about our children and their children. And that is important, but we want to bring environmental awareness into our lives. We want to connect people in their own inner environment with our outer environment, and to just come together in a place for that, and to bring things together. It was just two or three weeks ago that the scientists revealed that carbon dioxide levels in the upper atmosphere reached for the first time ever 400 parts per million. And this is the point where many said, it's a tipping point. There's no looking back. Well, the Earth is warming up. It does it naturally. And, of course, 7 billion people on the planet living in a manner that we all live and engage in this world and what we do with the planet. Is that incredible imbalance that we have, which of course could be, which I see as a reflection of the imbalance within our own personal life, but that incredible imbalance that we have with our environment, that ultimately that is a major contributing factor to increasing and accelerating this climate change. And so there's a multitude of things, like you were just referencing, Jesse, that really can be attended to. And I am anything but a fatalist. I'm extremely optimistic about our humanity. I made a trip to the Amazon jungle last year in 2012. I've been many times. I got some quite powerful stories in the manuscript about going to the jungle, and it really is the womb of the mother. It really is the place where you know the interconnectivity of every little thing that is within that environment, dead and alive. It's all connected, and it's all working so in such deep symbiosis together. And so, I want to absorb some of that, let me get into that groove a little bit of that symbiosis, because really I came back, and the point, and I'll leave it at this for where we are, but I came back from the Amazon, and it was clearly felt and held that the vibrancy and life that we are living in our humanity is very much alive and well. And the light and the compassion and love that we bring into the world, that we can bring into the world, that we already have endowed within our being to show up in clear way, that we can, each of us can bring, is going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And we just need to show up and like you have been saying, be of service to your own spirit and your own soul, and be of service to the world, whatever that may look like. And sometimes for me, that's just picking up a piece of trash a day, if you know what I'm saying.
And all of those little pieces help. And we're getting down to where we have just a few minutes, literally just a few minutes to work with here. But I have one more comment come into the chat room. That says, okay, so as long as the company is fluid and profitable, the land is safe. If this company went under, God forbid, the property would be at risk again?
And no, the property would not be at risk again. And the key with doing conservation work is, and it references one of your other people in the chat room asked, is about creating conditions upon title, upon the rights of the property. And those conditions are senior to anything else. In other words, they done properly. There's a lot of folks that do not do it properly, but done properly, it is in perpetuity. So it doesn't matter what happens to me or my company or anybody else who is involved in doing meaningful conservation work, because those rights are now held by the property. I have heard of instances of trying to break them or overturn them, and it's anything is possible. In this day and age, which is the beauty of life, of course, because we're really dealing in possibilities and not in probabilities, but anything is possible. But as we practice it and as the law is in the United States, it is in perpetuity. And as if it is done correctly and properly, nothing can break that, no matter what the case may be.
And that person in chat said, that is terrific. Thank you, Adam. And I think these are great points to bring out, because I think they're questions that people have anytime we're looking at something that's profit-based. And I just think that what you're doing is such a great example of how you can have something profit-based, be successful, and be healing the world and the planet, and be following a path that's true to spirit, true to heart. And it's a rare combination, but that's part of why I brought you on the show, was to show exactly that aspect, that there is this blending, there is this harmony, and there are these things that can be found here. And if you can sum it up in about 2 minutes for me, I would love to say, long range, what can we expect from this project that's going on and from your work with the Earthkeeper Alliance?
Well, we intend to continue our march, and I, as an inspiration to others, I hope that various other social entrepreneurs that may be listening or out there, it is about stepping up into that march, and all noble endeavors are as difficult as they are rare, and that comes from a famous philosopher named Spinoza. And considering that the paradigm is new, it's different, it's fairly radical, although it's happening, it's finding acceptance, it's finding understanding. A lot of that's coming through, unfortunately, through major events that are happening around the globe as it pertains to climate change. But our plans are to continue straight ahead and to do what we can to not only effectuate preservation of lands, of wild spaces, to keep them wild, but it's also really about changing the attitudes of our industry and how our industry, real estate, thinks about this particular way of approaching the land. And so when we can do that, then we can think about changing the carbon imprint before the carbon imprint even occurs, to stop it before it even happens, not to try to say, let's cut back on this or that. We just stop it before it happens, and to limit that anything that may ever occur. And obviously the beneficiaries of that are the environment and all that is involved in that particular ecosystem, but the community as well. And so we can plan to continue with that, to bring that message, to effectuate that change in the most powerful way that we can. And then lastly, I would just say, is really to really bring on a personal level, is to really share the manuscript and the book, which you can get on Amazon.com. It's there now, and you can get it there. And to share that, and to share the message of our own personal ecology, and to ultimately, because my sense of it is that each of us has a gift. Each of us has a story. Each of us has something to bring into this world, not tomorrow, but right now. And to encourage others to show up for that. And one of my dear friends and mentors and a beautiful man said, it's about giving permission. Just give yourself permission through kindness, through compassion, through forgiveness, and through love of yourself. So that's the idea, is to bring that out and share that message and to be with everybody and to move forward with our Earthkeeper movement and urban gardens and bringing people together and sharing with you, Jesse, and sharing with you and the work that you're doing and the things that you're helping others with, and to deliver that message into places and into new places that maybe haven't heard that message again, but it can mean something to each of us. So that's what we're up to, and that's kind of what I'm up to, and I look forward to collaborating with you and all of you as we move forth into these new and exciting times. And 2013 and beyond is certainly going to be a ride, but we might as well go and go together and show up and have some fun, make some money, and make a difference. So that's a little bit of what we're up to right now.
And this is really great, really, as one of our chatters said, inspiring. This has been an inspiring example of a company doing good work while turning a profit. And it is. I think it really is. You're finding that blend in there. And you've addressed why it's important to preserve these natural spaces and to do it before the imprints are there. I think that's so very, very important. It's not even just about minimal imprint, but as a lot of the adventure places and national parks are, following Leave No Trace, but it's beyond that. It's stopping it before it ever gets there. And I think that's important. You've shared your work. I encourage people to go and get a copy of your book. Look at the work you're doing. Get on to earthkeeperalliance.com and see more of what Adam is up to. He's got some great examples on there as well of preserving the natural spaces and the work that they've done and the accomplishments that they've been able to do. And he shared a tremendous amount of inspiration that we don't have to come in and develop these lands. We can take it back. We can take it back from big money, and big money can become our friend along the way. So many things there. I think, Adam, you're certainly a trendsetter. I think that you're opening the door for others to follow in your footsteps. And we've been talking with Adam C. Hall tonight. He's been sharing with us his work in the Earthkeeper Alliance and his concepts of undevelopment. And you can look more at his work at, again, earthkeeperalliance.com. And if you've missed any part of the show, I highly encourage you go back, listen to it in the archives, share it with people so they can hear these options and what is happening. And Adam, I want to thank you so much for giving me your time tonight, for being here, sharing with our listeners, and providing the inspiration of the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you to each of your audience, and blessings, love, and sweet dreams tonight, and enjoy the summer, and look forward to seeing everybody out on the path.
Great. And next week, coming up here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I'm going to have Dorothy Nettermeyer on my show, and she's going to be talking about her work in relation to PTSD and how reincarnation plays into this. So particularly those that have been involved in war situations, she's going to be looking at reincarnation cycles that create PTSD to surface. And this is actually going to be part of a series of looking at PTSD. So it's going to be very exciting to listen to those connections that she's making in there. Again, my next set of books is going to be coming out soon. I spent today creating several new videos, and those are going to be up and on my website in the next 24 hours, so I definitely encourage you to go and do that. Check out all of the events that I've got going on also at jessieannicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. There's about 18 of them available to register for between now and the end of August. I'm working on putting together the 2013 Compassion Tour. And you can certainly find out more about the tour, connect with me, check out my blog, purchase products or services that I offer, find ways to connect with me, listen to archive shows, upcoming shows that are coming, that you can see what's coming up, watch video trips. All those things can be done through my website, which is at jessieannicholsgeorge1, that's the number one, .com. There's a great section on there for Main Street Universe where you can follow all of our hosts, catch their upcoming shows, listen to their archive shows as well, learn a little bit about the people that are a part of Main Street Universe. And this information is all listed at the bottom of today's show description as far as website links and things like that that are on there. And also, please go check out my Indiegogo campaign. Again, that is indiegogo.com/projects/the-compassion-tour-2013. Definitely trying to get out to some of those nonprofit organizations, to some of these organizations doing animal rescue and other events that are going on, and help raise some money for the people that are just working to no end on creating those things. So, and if you think it's not making a difference, you know, whether it's my campaign, whether it's Adam's nonprofit group or something else altogether, you know, even small amounts add up. Even if it's $2 or $5, those add up. Matter of fact, I was thinking the other day, if every one of my connections that I had put in $2 to $5, I would meet more than my goal to make it happen. So, don't forget, I've got a special running for the month of June, and that's to receive shorter coaching and reading sessions. I'm offering 20-minute sessions for $30, 10-minute sessions for $15, and to take advantage of that, just email me at jessie@jessieannicholsgeorge1.com. I've also created Jessie's Quantum Club,
which you can check out at jessiesquantumclub.eventbrite.com. Great thing to look at. And don't forget, we've got several shows here on Main Street Universe throughout the week. Sunday nights, we have Darren Bouquet, who's a reader at Madame Laveau in New Orleans. He does spiritual insights and readings. Kevin is on Monday nights with Walking on the Sidewalk using his Horizon Oracle Journeys deck, a deck that he created. You can find out more about that deck at templeofgaia.com. Tuesdays is Inner Wisdom with Mary Phelan. Wednesday nights is our flagship show with Daniel, Janice, and Brett. And this is Jesse Ann Nichols George. Thank you so much for being here tonight. I look forward to seeing you back here next week as we delve more into activating compassion. Don't forget that if you've enjoyed the show this evening, to share it with others. It will be available at the same link in our archives. And I'm going to leave you tonight with Yearning For, also known as Over and Over by Shem Shai. And simply, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you again next week, right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend and have an amazing week.
And if I could see what makes me blind, I would soar to the edge of my mind. And to touch what seems unreal, just to show you the way that I feel. And we are in time with time, one with season of change inside. And we are in tune with the tune, caught in a balance of sun and moon. Oh, deep inside, the light within, shining to show you it's here to begin. When all I have is all I need, I will soar to the edge of eternity. And we see in eye to eye, one within love to be for the divine. And we're walking hand in hand, caught in the balance of God and man. Learning to walk just a little bit slower, whispering secrets that you can't keep it. No turning back now, this time we reveal it. Once you are another, all will discover the essence within the most beautiful lover. Time is still turning, the love is still burning. Deep in your spirit, your heart still yearning. Your love.
learning to walk just a little bit slower. Whispering secrets, I bet you can't keep it. No turning back now, this time we reveal it. Once you are another, all will discover the essence within the most beautiful lover. Time is still turning, the love is still burning. Deep in your spirit, your heart still.